Days pass, and the years vanish, and we walk sightless among miracles. Lord, fill our eyes with seeing and our minds with knowing. Let there be moments when your presence, like lightning, illuminates the darkness in which we walk. Help us to see wherever we gaze that the bush burns unconsumed, and we, clay touched by your hand, can reach out for holiness and exclaim in wonder, how filled with awe is this place, and we did not know it. Please be seated. I first of all just want to say well done on that psalm. We're learning, and it's hard to learn something new, but good job. And the other thing I want to say is, this rain, this humidity, it too shall pass someday. Growing up in Colorado, we had, they still do have, but I remember, these dramatic summer clouds. They would hang out over the plains. I grew up in Denver, and you could see them out over the plains, tall, towering structures. And they were just, I mean, they were huge, just huge. They would be flat on the very top, like they had bumped up right against the top of heaven and couldn't go any farther. And then underneath that would be all this fluffiness, just beautiful fluffiness. And if you, like me as a little girl, would sit and watch it, you'd see this fluffiness form like this sort of fluid cotton candy just going in and out and pushing out and up and just really beautiful. And then at the very bottom of the cloud, on the part that was closest to the earth, it was dark. And it too was flat, but it was dark and angry looking. These were the clouds of the summer thunderstorms, of lightning and thunder, lots of drama. So as a little girl, I used to think that God was in those clouds. That's what I like to think. And if I stared at him just long enough, maybe I would get to see the face of God. And then I would think maybe God was traveling in those high, thin clouds, you know, those ones that kind of go scudding across the sky, that God was traveling on those because he had to go from place to place answering everybody's prayers. You know, sometimes I still imagine God doing all that. When the Israelites escaped Egypt and began their 40 years in the wilderness, they were hemmed in by God before and behind by a pillar of cloud at night and a pillar of fire. Nope, have that backwards. A pillar of fire by night and a pillar of cloud by day. God was present with them, and such was this presence of God before and behind them as they made their way into this new life that God was calling them to. And yet, out in this wilderness, the fire and smoke just didn't seem to be enough proof that God was there. Yeah, maybe that smoke, it was just a desert dust kicked up by the wind. And maybe that fire, well, you know, that could have just been a wildfire. The whole congregation of wandering Israelites, they needed to know. No, I don't know that they needed to know, but they certainly wanted to know, where's God? Where is God? Out here in the desert, there wasn't the food they were used to. They would rather have the flesh pots of Egypt and the food that God provided. Where was the water they needed? Where was God? So they quarreled. They became a quarrelsome people. They quarreled with each other, they quarreled with Moses, and they had issues with God. Where was God? Where is God? So God tells Moses, take your staff. You know that one that I gave you? You know that one that has the snake head on it? The serpent's head? You remember the serpent, don't you, from the Garden of Eden? Yeah, take that staff, the one that's got that serpent's head on it, and strike the ground. So Moses does that. And water comes gushing forth. Water for the people. Water to quench their thirst. The evidence of God was in the cloud, by day and the fire by night. And now the evidence of God is in the water. God is here. God delivers. I love that Moses ends up naming this place Massah, which means test, and Meribah, which means quarrel. Names that have stuck. You can still find them on the map. And the irony in all this should not be lost on us that God uses the serpent, the sign of temptation and sin, as the means of our deliverance. So we cast forward a few thousand years to the day that Jesus meets the woman at the well in Samaria. He was traveling through what was a no man's land for the Jews, because Jews didn't intermingle with Samaritans. They were those people. We don't talk to those people. And I love that line. Why was Jesus talking to a woman? Disciples didn't get it. Yet Jesus stops there anyway, and he sits down right there by Jacob's well, who's one of his ancestors, one of the Israeli ancestors. And it's a very hot day. And up comes a woman to get water. Okay, we think she needs water. But you know, all sorts of things have been said about this woman over the centuries, over history. She has been shamed. She was a shamed woman because she had so many husbands. Jewish law allows for divorce, but she's had 5 husbands. And the one she was living with wasn't her husband. So she is shamed and has been labeled as wanton. She has to come to the well on the hottest part of the day to avoid the women of her village who will humiliate her for her shame. See, the good women, the righteous women, they come in the morning and evening when it's cool. What we don't know about this woman who comes to Jesus at Jacob's well, what we don't know about her, we can label her with all this stuff. But we never know her name. She has no name. She just gets called the woman at the well. This woman with no name, shunned and dishonored, well, she was not considered a devout woman of God. And yet, it is to her that Jesus speaks. In what begins as a teasing banter, Jesus asks her for a drink of water. Now, Jesus could have easily gotten his own water. There's always a cup on a rope in a well that you can dip down and get your own water. And he could have easily gotten his own. But he asks this nameless woman for one. It's as if Jesus was waiting just for her. And in the midst of this interesting conversation they have back and forth, Jesus looks right into her soul and knows everything about her. She has had 5 husbands. She is living with another man. And what Jesus sees is the fullness of who she is, including her sins, her compulsions, her hopes, her dreams. And what Jesus knows is that she desires relief and hope for a life that's better than the one she's got. So he reveals the fullness of himself to her. He is the Messiah. He is the one who brings life-giving hope. It should not be lost on us that while her disgrace forces this woman to come to the well at midday, it is also the reason she meets Jesus. Her sin that makes her shunned by the community has become her deliverance when she encounters Jesus. So her heart singing with joy, she drops her water jar and runs back to the village and tells them to come and see. Could this be the Messiah? It is the Messiah. And he knows everything about me. And it's okay. It's okay. Once again, the evidence of God is in the water and in Jesus. And God delivers. In the second and third centuries, Christian asceticism emerged as an important spiritual discipline. Christian asceticism. Men and women would step out of the common world and go into the desert wilderness. In the Mideast, there's so much desert, it wasn't hard. And they would go take up residences in caves and monasteries and build themselves little huts. And they would leave the common world to go meditate and pray on their faith with God. What they desired was to have a closer encounter with God, to find evidence and confirmation that God was with them. These Christian ascetics were called the Desert Fathers and Mothers, and they have come to be revered for their wisdom and faith that they learned by going into these desert encounters. They learned from a close and solitary communion with the divine. Now, among these Desert Fathers and Mothers was a very important Christian theologian, Origen, an Origen who's written many of the prayers that we have in our prayer book. Actually, Origen said this: "You yourself are even another little world, and have within you the sun and the moon and also the stars. You yourself are another little world, and have within you the sun and the moon and also the stars." This idea that we are a microcosm, a miniature world in ourselves, that goes all the way back to Genesis, when God formed us in God's image. We carry within us the microcosm of all that God has made and all that God is. We are the evidence of God. As these desert monastics dove deep into their relationship with God, what they encountered was the wisdom that is contained within our own souls, or all the feelings and passions and desires and hopes and longings and nightmares and compulsions that make human society so messed up. All that is contained in this little microcosm that we are. All of the passions, desires, nightmares, all that's in there. And so is all the goodness that God has made heaven to be. All the goodness and joy and grace and mercy, all that's in this microcosm too. So our hearts, the human hearts, become this redemptive arena between God and his angels and the forces of disintegration and death. In other words, those very same things that compel our temptations and sins are the same things that lead us to holiness and redemption and will reveal the presence of God. The very same things that compel our temptations and sins are the same things that lead us to holiness and redemption and reveal the presence of God. This is what Jesus knew in the woman at the well, that within her all the life forces were at work, her fleshly needs, her soulful desires, her hope that she would never want for thirst again. And Jesus doesn't fix her life, but he offers the gift of seeing herself as God knows and sees her. That she carries within herself the microcosm of heaven, the very imprint of God. She is the goodness that God has made. She is the evidence of God. This is what God was trying to impart to the Israelites in their 40-year wilderness wanderings. They were the very imprint of God. God who is fully present within and without. And so it is with us. And so it is with us. We carry within us the microcosm of all that God has made and all that God is. We are the evidence of God. God who sees us in secret, secretly sees the whole world in each of us and loves us and delivers us. Sins, warts, scars, beauty, compassion, hopes, and dreams, all of it, all of us, reveals the presence of God and the fullness of heaven. God is present within. God is present without. Days pass and the years vanish. We walk sightless among miracles. Lord, fill our eyes with seeing and our minds with knowing, so that we, clay touched by your hand, may reach out for your holiness and exclaim in wonder, how filled with awe is this place. May we know it.